Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Ride Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. For those of you who are new to the show, I'm a Cuban-American attorney from South Florida and a conservative political analyst. Let me throw in a quick disclaimer here. Please don't interpret anything said on this show as legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please consult with an attorney licensed in your jurisdiction. So today on the show, we have Yendi Alvarez, and she is the Director of Communications for the Miami Young Republican. She is CEO of her own marketing corporation, and she's also a ballerina. She wears so many hats, she wears them so well, and we are especially interested in tackling some very important topics with her today. We're going to start out with the George Floyd tragedy, the protests, the riots. Also, how to address the generational divide between the conservative movement in addressing these issues of race. We have a very interesting discussion about that. And we go into talks about the environment, Joe Biden, and also some information for you young entrepreneurs out there, especially women entrepreneurs, some good advice from somebody who's been in the trenches and knows how to make waves but don't ruffle feathers in the process. So great show, hope you enjoy. So let's jump right in. Hey Yendi, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Ariana. How are you?
I'm so excited. So I was just trying to remember when we first met. So back when I was a senior in college, I was looking around for something to do for the local Republican Party, and somebody gave me your name. And I remember going to a GOP TV event where you were helping out, and that's where we met, and we've stayed in touch ever since.
Yes, indeed. I remember the day I met you as well. I've always thought you've always been a very bright star, very smart woman, and I'm incredibly proud to know you.
Oh, thank you. And I always thought you were a girl boss. I was like, I want to be like her when I grow up.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you have so many hats, and I feel like our audience deserves to know because it's amazing. I mean, you were a ballet instructor, you're the communications director for Miami Young Republicans, you're a CEO of Doxy Digital Media, like so many hats, and you wear them so well. And what an inspiration for young women you are.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. I do wear a lot of different hats. And I think, I mean, I could attribute that to my hyperactivity issues, which is what my mom would. I need my hands full and my mind working at all times. So yes, I definitely have an extensive background. And yes, it did begin with ballet.
Well, I think it's amazing and it's really admirable. You know, productive people are always that example to follow, right? And I have to ask you though, like, what's your opinion on what's going on in the world right now? George Floyd tragedy and the protests. What's your take on that?
I'm really heartbroken and disheartened by everything. I think there's a combination of a lot of things going on. I think there's a combination of the underlying issue over the last generations of you know, systematic racism. I think there's an issue now with mainstream media, and we have all these outside factors now, cyber warfare, you know, misinformation campaigns from Russia. All that plays a major, major role into how we, the Americans, are receiving our information and how we're responding as a society in whole.
So what do you think is right now the biggest challenge? Obviously, what happened to Mr. Floyd is a tragedy. There needs to be some type of justice. There needs to be accountability. Police departments across the country, you know, there needs to be some reflection. But the basic citizen, the person that's not involved in the criminal justice system, what can they do? How can they help? What's your take on that?
I have several takes on that. I mean, we'll start with how you're asking me, the normal citizen, the basics, sure. The person who isn't in law enforcement. And that would be to inform yourself correctly, use the right communication channels, you know, make sure you hear or read online or see on social media feeds. Go to the basics, go back to, you know, Associated Press, go back to trusted news sources to get your information. I think as a citizen, it's important to speak up now. You and I are newlyweds, pretty much, I guess you could say, or we're just starting life, you guess you can call it. But yeah. It's going back to basics and just understanding that, you know, we're all human. We all feel stuff. We all have pain. We all have joys. We all have sorrows. And I think there's a lack of understanding each other. I think we have this the screen that's become the divider wall between us, between each other, I think, just this technical screen. So I think a lot of it has to do, as a normal citizen, inform yourself correctly, inform yourself with the right information.
Absolutely, absolutely. And on that note, that we seem to have that, you know, disconnect, even though we're connected through social media, there's a disconnect as far as we're not listening to each other, we're just yelling at each other. And we need to listen. What do you think of the riots, though? A lot of people are bringing attention to that. Does that take away from the core message? How do you balance coverage of both?
I read something interesting. I go to Forbes a lot to read some news, you know, global economy, and it is a good source for me right now. And the mayor reported in Minnesota that a lot of the arrests are out-of-towners and agitators and white supremacy. So I think that what's happening now is there's a domestic terrorist issue, and there's a lot of inner turmoil in our country that's causing all this chaos and this imbalance. Because if you look on the news and you see all the coverage, a lot of peaceful protesters. I mean, I'm kind of proud that went out protesting. The ones that did the peaceful protest, they did a great job. They went, they held up their signs. They did the classic true example of how we as American citizens use our freedom of speech and our right to protest. Now, looting, rioting, shooting, robbing, stealing, that's not protesting. That's just taking advantage of the platform and the situation.
Absolutely. And recognition to Miami, because one of the better behaved cities.
Correct.
That were affected by this. What about the Hispanic community? Do you think there's enough dialogue in the Hispanic community about this issue?
In the Hispanic community, I'd love to say that we're a wonderful little potaje, if you know what I'm talking
yes.
about.
Yes.
A potaje, or just a mix of things, because the Hispanic is not just one nationality. The Hispanic is several different nationalities all over the world, and we are so many different colors, but we're all under that same umbrella of Hispanidad. And I think that the world could learn a lot about how, you know, we as one major group are so varied inside. And I think that the Hispanic culture, I think our generation, that the first generations born here and so often after, mm-hmm. we get it. We get that, you know, we're all together, we're all Americans, we're all citizens of the world. So I would have to say that if there are any negative connotations in the Hispanic community, it would be stuck to an old school mentality, which is basically what we're dealing with now, you know, the old school mentality with the old school thinking of racism. And I don't see that in our new generation of Hispanics.
That generational shift, it's a positive
thing. Absolutely, yes.
But don't you feel we also have a responsibility also to have those difficult conversations with maybe our older family members?
Correct.
And friends?
Correct. That is exactly what I'm saying. I mean, to tell your 80-year-old abuela, you know, grandma, that's not nice, you don't say those things, you know. And sometimes a lot of it is, you know, back to going to communications, is in the tone and in the way that it's things are delivered. There's a lot of generalized statements, and there's a lot of things that Hispanics or older Hispanics would consider a joke. And it's no, that's not funny. It's actually painful and it's hurtful. And
what do you think of the president's response? Would you like to see something more from him? Do you think it's just right? What's your take on it?
The president's response, in truth, I mean, he got in front of the camera quickly. He condemned the notion of, you know, the whole act. We got federal investigators' attention onto the case quickly. So I could say that his response was quick. What I could see more from Donald Trump is more of an empathetic delivery of his speeches. Maybe.
I think that's an area of opportunity for him, my personality per se.
Right. Like, and I don't know him personally. I've only gathered what I've seen on television and
sure.
And we don't know what's real and what's not. Because remember, he is a bigger than thou, you know, character on television. So, you know, and the smoke and mirrors of the TV is quite different from when you pull that curtain and you're peeking in and you're looking into the real world. So I don't know. I don't know whether he is that way really, or if it's because he's a New Yorker, or if it's because he's, you know, I just feel like I definitely could see more empathy in his speeches, and that may come across or be accepted better amongst Americans.
Sure. And going back to what we were talking about, generation, his generation, you know, sometimes that touchy-feely stuff, if you will, wasn't well perceived, so he may be uncomfortable with that. But again, it's very a personal reaction to something.
Right, exactly. Talking about that and going back to the generational shift and talking about racism and talking about, I mean, a lot of these, the generation, I would say Donald Trump's parents, which would be our grandparents or, you know, mm-hmm. our parents' parents, they went through a rough one. I mean, they had to deal with, you know, recovering from World War II. A lot of the Hispanics that I work with and I deal with here in Miami they left everything behind to start a new life in the middle of their teenage years. They were brought up very rough, with less, like you said, touchy-feely, less, you know, hugs, less kisses. And maybe that could be a theory. Maybe, you know, our parents wound up thinking, you know, maybe I should hug my kids a little bit more. I don't know. I mean, right. It's just right. Shooting some ideas, but I do feel like we need more empathy in on the public soapbox.
What about Biden's response? How would you evaluate him?
I think Biden's an opportunist right now. I think he's trying his hardest to exploit the media attention that all this is bringing. I think Biden sometimes gets lost in his own words. And sometimes I don't know if he's standing or he knows where he's standing.
And honestly, at least from my perspective, there's about, you know, if he has the mental agility for the job.
I don't think so. I think that he's also been another one who has been kind of a lackluster in his response. There's a lack of inspiration. I don't know about Ariana, but when I look to a leader, and when I listen to someone speak, you can tell right away whether they're going to inspire you or not. And I think doesn't have that inspirational, that, you know, if you've ever listened to Mario Diaz-Balart speak, he like takes your breath away because he just continues, you know, if you heard Marco Rubio, there's this poetic way of delivering things that Biden just doesn't have it.
Well, that speech that he delivered on the George Floyd tragedy, that was the most lackluster speech on race that any modern politician has given in recent history.
Correct. And that's
exactly, and for me,
it was
disappointing. It was disappointing because you would think with so many handlers and, you know, the best in the business are part of his staff, you would think they would have come up with something better, but just the delivery of it, he didn't seem sincere. And it was just, you want to create this narrative of how urgent these issues are, which they are. It needs to be heartfelt if you're going to show empathy. It can't be just canned lines.
Right. And what is this to say? And going back to the theme of generational shift, I think a lot of it has to do with that there's too many old folks up there behind that microphone. And I think America is slowly shifting into a younger demographic, and we need younger people up there, you know, being our symbolic representative.
And Yandy, the irony, the party that's supposed to stand for minorities, the party that loves diversity and embraces it wholeheartedly, the party that says that we need more of it, right now represented by an older gentleman, completely removed from the generation of today, and his advisors, everybody around him is white and male.
Correct.
And it doesn't fit the narrative. And that's why a lot of people look at that and go, but that doesn't represent your platform.
And
that doesn't look
right. And mysteriously wealthy. All of a sudden you're mysteriously wealthy. So whatever it is that they've accused Republicans of being and conservatives of being and our party of being for so long, you've got the physical evidence right in front of you.
Yep. And look at the contrast. Look how many Hispanic and Black voices you have on the Republican side. I mean, you have Marco Rubio, that's a shining star. Ted Cruz, I mean, Candace Owens, a very outspoken Black American, conservative Black American. You have so much diversity on the right, and that's supposed to be, that's the contradiction. We're supposed to be all sorts of things except that, from that standpoint.
I mean, and our last, the last election, the last presidential election that got Trump, you know, elected, the primaries, it was a historic year for women. And especially women, diverse women. We had first Republican, a Korean American congresswoman. We had on the Republican side, the first female representative from, I think it was Alabama or Tennessee, one of the southern states. There's so much noise and clutter going around trying to bring Donald Trump down that there's such a lack of celebrating these milestones for women in general and for Hispanics and for minorities in general.
I think it's really hard to come out and say, look, I'm a woman, I'm educated, I'm successful, and by the way, I'm conservative. There's a stigma to that.
I have no problem with saying those things. But you know me, you know I can.
Yes, but you would be surprised. There's some people that give you, you know, that look like, really, girl? Like, what's wrong with you?
Well, I'll tell you something real quick. When I was in, fresh out of college, you know, I had my group of friends that I had known for a good decade now. And I think fresh out of college, we've already kind of established our political preferences and we've had enough time and enough maturity to understand where we go politically. And I was very adamant on being Republican. It's just the way, not that I was raised, because my parents were very open-minded. I mean, they were Republican, but they allowed to pick my own way. And I went through college, I did the political science program, and I studied all of it, Ariana. And then I decided wholeheartedly that I am a conservative Republican. I lost every single friend that I socialized with during college because of that.
I can totally relate. one of the bonus episodes that I did on this podcast, I shared my story, like school, like me being a Republican was like saying a four-letter word.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes. And you're talking about, you know, future lawyers, people that are supposed to, you know, talk from both sides of their mouth. You would think they would be more accepting.
Of course.
And it was the total opposite. And I was like, I can't believe this. Like, I had more acceptance in my college years than in my graduate school years.
Wow.
And it was a complete confusion for me. And I was, I don't understand this. You're supposed to be more understanding. But I think especially in the last 10 years, I think we've lost the ability to agree to disagree in a respectful manner. It used to be that you could disagree with somebody and still go out and have a beer with
correct.
That person.
Correct. Yes. And I think, and it goes back to what I started with at the beginning of the podcast, was the lack of human interaction and the fact that now we've got keyboard warriors who have a soapbox, a very public and very open soapbox and platform, so that they could just say whatever. I came across a quote a while ago where, you know, social media has allowed for the fools and the idiots who usually rant after getting drunk at a bar now have a complete open platform to talk about whatever they want.
Sure. That's so true. And it, you know, there's something about not looking them in the eye and saying all these things behind a keyboard that empowers a lot of hate.
Correct. And bullying.
I think, yes, absolutely. And it's very disheartening to see that, because I cannot have a conversation with anybody online because it becomes very personal very quick.
Oh, yes.
So I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just adding an extra point. And then it becomes, oh, no, but you didn't say this. You are this. I can't do that. It gets to a point where I lose patience for that. So I'm like, I'm going to just be in my own little world and not engage. But sometimes I feel I have a responsibility, because then people think that they're alone. People who think like me think they're alone.
Right. Well, that's where I think that's where you and I kind of, that's why we click so well when we first met, because we're of the same mentality. Have that. Yes, it's okay. I mean, I don't mind sitting there with a liberal or with a Democrat and talking. And there's some points that we can come together and really agree. I'm all about bipartisan. I like bipartisan politics. That means that the country's working, that the system's supposed to be working the way it is. But I think there's also the mass mentality of, I have to think like the group of people around me so that I'm accepted. And you know, there's also that. There's so many layers of complications, and it has to do with, you know, the social and mental welfare of people, and how, you know, how can you sit behind a keyboard and insult somebody? Would you have the same chutzpah, I guess you could say, and say mm-hmm. it to their face?
I don't think so. No. And I think, and I created the concept for this show, I wanted this not to be like your dad's political news show. I'm not just going to throw grenades and say, this is what I think, and be inflammatory. I actually want to have real discussions, because I feel that we have more in common than what divides
correct.
Us. And I think as we move forward, the issues our generation is going to have to deal with, GMD, like national debt, pandemic, social unrest, all of those
the
things.
The environment, Ariana. Like, yes, I'm afraid. Absolutely. I'm afraid. Like, my husband and I question whether we want to have children nowadays. And not because of the environment. I don't want my kid playing in a playground full of trash. Then but that's, guess what? A traditional liberal idea. And I'm a conservative. And I feel I need to contribute to help this environment.
And I feel that that's also another thing. Like, you and I can say, well, we believe in clean air. We believe in clean water. That doesn't mean that we want government takeover of that.
Correct.
That just means that we believe that private citizens need to take responsibility for this one planet that we all share. And that discussion that, are you a tree hugger?
Then that goes on our side. We get like, you and I, who are Republican conservatives, get blasted for thinking that it's okay to clean up the environment, and they don't stop to say, like what you just said, no, I think it's important for a private citizen to you know, have his own responsibility. Not that the government should take over, but we get it from both sides. We get it from our Republican old school non-open minded people, and we get it from the liberals that don't read.
Absolutely. That goes against that generation argument we were having, in the sense that we need to kind of, the older generation, it's okay to say that. It doesn't mean we want socialism.
Exactly.
And it's difficult.
I just think we're in a tough little era. You know how there was, the Renaissance was beautiful, you know, but they had to go through some deep dark stuff first. And I think that we're about to embrace a renaissance in our politics. And I think if you have your head on right, If you have your head on straight, you'd be able to, you can navigate through it. Also, a lot of people are very emotional and heated. People get insulted right away by something that may not even have been, you know, presented in a manner to insult you. Self-responsibility, self-awareness is also a big thing.
And if we have, you know, the older generation and listening, I just want to throw something out there. This doesn't mean that you're going to be apologetic for your beliefs, because I sometimes believe the older generation thinks that. It doesn't mean that you're going to apologize for everything. It just says, look, we acknowledge this, but I have a different approach. I don't need government to come in to do this. That just starting from a point of acknowledgement, that's all this is.
Yeah. And you and I both studied international relations, political science. We did the whole snafu. And a lot of the literature that we read growing up or studying was, you know, like the lack of understanding each other's pain and understanding each other, you know, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Every book I've read in school about it was, it began with that side doesn't understand my pain and the other side doesn't understand their pain.
Absolutely. And acknowledgement is a great first step. It doesn't mean we're going to have an idea as far as to solve the issue, but at least it starts the conversation.
Correct.
And since I want to ask you, like, being a woman and an entrepreneur, how do you get people to acknowledge, you know, that's a difficult thing to be. I consider women right now that are pioneers and, you know, entrepreneurs and businesswomen, that's still a male-dominated environment. How do you make waves in that without ruffling any feathers?
Believe it or not, I use old school protocols. I use the old school methods. My grandmother always taught me that you get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. So let's start there. I've always addressed everyone in a respectful manner. I've always understood that every person I do business with is here to work and is there to make their bottom line and to make their life work. So I approach every business deal, every business person, every network, every contact with respect of the other person. And I think that, you know, a lot of people know you need to go in there thinking how much you're going to get from this person. No, I go in there respecting the person and wanting to hear. So I think that's helped in my career and my businesses, you know, just listening to people and taking a deep breath and not getting emotional.
Do you think people respect that approach as far as not taking it personal?
Correct. That is the, I mean, you have your cases, and from what I've heard, you have personal cases, but in general, I've never had an issue when I can sit there with a 70-year-old old school publisher who used to use typewriters and had a secretary a la Mad, and approach him with respect and understanding that, you know, this is the kind of guy that's old school, that gets up at 4 a.m, that wants, you know, the list of things done, just like if he thinks everybody's a secretary. So let's play with that in his mind and use that to your advantage. I use it to my advantage. Okay, if he thinks I'm the secretary, great, I'm gonna write a whole list. This is what you need to do. By the way, did you have a banana today? Mm-hmm. You know, just play with it. Play to it.
Yes, be strategic about it.
Correct.
Have you ever felt sexual harassment or may feel uncomfortable by somebody in your business connection?
Oh, girl, I got stories.
How have you handled it?
Okay, so I'm going to give you one story, which for a very long time, you know, being in the dance world, you know, that's just one of those, being in dance and in tech, because remember, I have a tech background. So I started in Tiger Direct. You're going to hear it all. And I've heard it all. I've heard it all. And I've had to, you know, keep quiet and not fight back and not say anything. So what I did with Tiger Direct a long time ago, I started doing video podcasting, which is what they hired me for, to create a video channel and start creating videos.
Okay.
So I had a daily video about, you know, just three pieces of news, and it would be a green screen setup. So I would stand in front of a green screen with like a background of some sort relevant to the content I was talking about. So I would get comments in YouTube and comments in below. Oh, you're a woman. You don't belong in technology. You belong in the kitchen. Go make me a sandwich. These are like, and I kept the comments up just so that I could read them now, you know, years later, to laugh at them, because these are true trolls, is what you call online bullies. So what I did, I used to get upset and I was like, no, this is not going to happen. So what I started doing is I got kitchen green screen background. So every week it'd be a new kitchen. So there you go. I created a virtual kitchen and still talked about technology and still built a computer in the kitchen and still put together robots. So, you know, I like, I don't know if you've read The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Okay. So that's kind of like the mantra of my life.
Okay.
I like to approach it the way The Count of Monte Cristo approached it. Not upset, but smart.
All right. Rational. I like it. Very nice. But that's a really good point. So, and I think that's a lesson for, you know, young upcoming girls that are trying to make their way out in the world. Don't take it personal. There's certain dynamics, unfortunately, correct, that you're going to confront, but it makes you stronger being able to, you know, get out of those situations in a graceful way.
Correct. And for women, I will always say, make sure you know your stuff. Make sure you know your stuff better than everyone else in this room that you're standing in. You make sure you know what you're talking about so that there's no chance that they can ever come back.
I say that for women and Hispanics. Don't ever...
For Hispanics.
Yes, correct. Because you always have to go the extra mile of being super prepared. But I'm okay with that. That's only to my benefit.
Me too. Exactly. And I've learned triple what my colleagues have learned, and I've been able to deal with problems that come my way and have no fear. I mean, fear is a lie. If you're scared of doing anything, you're never going to get accomplished. You're never going to come.
So why are you a conservative?
I'm a conservative because I feel that approaching situations in a conservative manner, economically, family-centered. I believe in conservative ideals globally. I believe that if you're able to provide your family with a meal, then you should be okay. And that kind of a conservative principle. I don't like high taxes if it's not necessary. I'm a business owner. I want to be able to be productive and not depend on the government. I don't like, me personally, if I don't need the government, I'm not going to use them. If I can work and if I have the capabilities and tools to make it on my own, then that's what I'm going to do. I like being a conservative because I have that independence. I have that self-drive.
That famous self-reliance, right? I can do it.
Self-reliance. I don't need anyone else. I mean, yes, we all essentially need other people, but as far as survival and as far as making sure that I can put that plate of food on my table, that's why I'm a conservative.
What's your hope for America?
My hope for America is for just to get past this moment, this weird, strange moment. My hope is that we're going to get past these race issues, racial issues that, you know, that our law enforcement officers, our teachers, our public service officials, that everyone wakes up and understands that we're all in this together. And the only thing that's certain amongst all of us is death. So until we get to that ending point, if we work together, so my hope would be for us to work together to build this country and make it as great as it's always been.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed our chat, and please come again.
Oh, please have me anytime. It was great speaking to you, and I wish you the best of luck. And whenever you run for office, count on my vote.
I'll hold you to that.
Yes.
Bye.
Well, it's recorded now, so it's permanent.
Gotcha. It's on the record.
It's on the record.
Take care. Of.
I have a dream that one day, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood? I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream. Every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together.
So that was the great Reverend Martin Luther King, American civil rights leader, and honestly, one of the most admirable figures in the 20th century. And the reason I inserted that clip is because some of us, especially us younger generation, are familiar with Martin Luther King's message and understand that that is how you should live your life. Content of your character. I don't care if you're black, white, yellow, red, blue. What matters is who you are as a person. And by me saying this, in no way am I trying to invalidate the feelings of frustrations that some in the Black community have. I understand it, I acknowledge it. But I also need to caution some of these sentiments, as well-intentioned as they are. Do not consider every white person a racist. If a person has lived a life where they've treated everybody equally and who has practiced Reverend Martin Luther King's philosophy and has judged people by the content of their character, do not begrudge that person for not accepting the label of being a racist. And I agree, it's not enough to be not a racist, you should be anti-racist. Completely agree with that. But I think we're coming to a point in this conversation where there are some, not all, that wanna put every white person in the same bucket and accuse every white person of being a racist. Now, personally, I am a Hispanic, but I could pass as white. I'm of European descent. And there are a lot of people that make assumptions about me. Assumptions of what I think, of what I've done, how I've treated people of other races. And it's unfair that judgments are being made based on the color of my skin. So racism is bad, period. Police brutality is an issue not just for the Black community, but for society in general. So I think as we move forward in this conversation, we need to keep in mind more hate is not going to solve these issues. More division is not going to address these issues. When bad behavior is observed from the right, from the left, from anybody, it should be called out. Nobody should dismiss Black lives, period. At the same time, we need to denounce violence, looting, and criminal behavior. Those two things can coexist. And it is our responsibility as citizens and as human beings to practice basic decency. And let me be clear, I am acknowledging your struggles. I am acknowledging your frustrations. I weep for your losses. But I think it's also important, in order to move forward in this conversation, that both sides come from a place of respect. So those of you who shout, "All lives matter," got it. I understand what you mean by that. All lives should matter. What the Black community is trying to emphasize with their hashtag Black Lives Matter is that there's a lot of Black lives that have been unjustly taken by police officers. And they want to make sure that there's attention brought to that. But those in the Black Lives Movement who are not brave enough to denounce the violence, who denounce the riots, because yeah, Antifa is there. They're part of the problem in those protests. They're stirring up trouble. Yes, there's white people looting and causing mischief. But I'm also seeing members of the Black community coming out of stores with TV sets and cheesecakes and looting pharmacies and burning buildings. That is wrong, and as a society, I think all of us need to be able to acknowledge that criminal behavior is wrong. At the same time, we cannot ignore the core issues. But I want to caution people. This is a time of high stress. Emotions are running high. Let's take a pause. Yes, we need to listen to each other. I completely agree. But part of that conversation doesn't mean that you shut white people down. If they want to be educated, answer their questions. It should be more information, not less. And don't come from a place of consternation. If white folks are asking questions, encourage it. It's a good thing. That doesn't mean they're disrespecting your community's struggles or your community's losses. It just means they want to know more. I personally want to see us be in a better place in the future on race relations, but it has to be from a place of respect, folks. It has to be concentrated on the things that unite us. Let's not fall prey to stereotypes and quick fixes to explaining these issues. And I'm being very cautious as far as the words I'm using because of how toxic this environment is. So I repeat to the Black community, I hear you, I acknowledge your pain. Let's work together to find real solutions to these issues, solutions that make sense. To the white community, listen, but I understand. You don't want to feel disrespect. You don't want to feel that you're being labeled as a racist when you have not demonstrated those behaviors. I understand both sides. So guys, practice empathy, practice patience, educate each other. And in upcoming episodes, we're going to discuss issues like how the Black community views the white community. And have guests on the show that will be able to talk a little bit more about that. We're also going to discuss the label of white privilege and what exactly does that mean. And how that doesn't really, I think, explain the full picture. And to those on the political scene that are trying to politicize this and are trying to stir the pot, that is not leadership. Joe Biden, when you say 10 to 15% of Americans are not very good people, what is your criteria for that? How do you know? Are you saying that 10 to 15% of Americans are not good people because they're white? Or 10 to 15% of Americans are not good people because they support President Trump? That is not being a uniter. That is not calming waters. That's being incendiary and dismissive. By the way, your friend Hillary Clinton made the same mistake by calling Trump supporters deplorables 4 years ago. At least do your homework. So, thanks guys for listening. And I send all of you a virtual hug because these are very stressful times. And remember, love conquers all. More understanding, more conversation. We love each other. We just need to reach a point where there's mutual respect. And there will be a day where Reverend Martin Luther King's vision will be realized. And I have hope that the generations to come will help make that a reality. So thank you guys. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show. So spread the word. Join us next week as we tackle another issue. This has been Right Owl Politics.